We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order for February 19th, 2015. This morning, members, we're going to hear the governor's tax proposal, tax bill. I am the author of that. It's Senate File 826. And the commissioner is with us this morning to present the governor's proposal. And so welcome, Commissioner Bowerly. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Feel free to bring up whoever you would wish from the department, and I think we will start. So, Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Bowerly with the Department of Revenue, and with me today is Paul Cummings, the department's tax policy manager, and as the chair mentioned, we would bring up any additional staff as necessary to answer any of the questions that you may have, and we'll, of course, identify them as they do. Thank you for allowing us to present the tax provisions of Governor Dayton's budget in this bill today. We appreciate this opportunity to share these items with you. We look forward to discussing them with you and answering any questions you may have and providing you with any information. We also look forward to hearing from those who are going to testify today. Mr. Chairman, I will need to leave after we finish the department's portion of the presentation, but many from DOR will stay to make sure that we hear those comments and any concerns that may have, and we look forward to working together to on these provisions. The first provision I'd like to start with is the Child and Dependent Care Credit. Minnesota has a credit for families who have child care expenses. This proposal from the governor would expand this credit to 92,000 new Minnesota families to bring that total to 130,000 families. Those families would see an average increase of $429 in this credit and increase the capacity for the credit up to $1,400 for some families and $21 if they have two or more children. Minnesota has the distinction of being one of the most expensive states for child care costs, not a list that we would choose to be on, but high-quality care does cost a good amount of money. And so we know that families are struggling, and I've recently been able to meet with some families that this credit would greatly affect, and it's really important for parents when they go to work to know that their children are safe and well cared for. It allows them to be more productive at work, and it, of course, makes sure their children are safe and getting a head start on that early learning that we know is so important. And so this credit will allow many of those families to make the right decision for their families based on what is right in terms of going to work or staying home or going to school, perhaps, as opposed to making a decision about whether to leave the workforce based on the financial constraints caused by paying for child care. I was in Sartell, Minnesota yesterday and had a chance to spend some time with some kids at a child care center and met a wonderful family. Both of the parents have jobs that demand some long hours, and for them, the best choice for them is to have children in a child care center, but it is a very difficult financial arrangement for them. And with all due respect to the committee, my morning with four-year-olds yesterday was a little more entertaining than this committee might be. So. As the next slide shows, this expansion, is in blue, you will see we'll expand it for many more families and allow those families at the lower income levels to receive an even greater credit for the costs that they are already bearing. This is part of a multi-prong approach to this problem. The governor's budget that will not be in the tax bill would also address the Head Start waiting lists and expand the sliding fee program as well. And so it is a multifaceted approach to this important need for Minnesota's families. The next item is a couple of changes that will modernize the railroad property tax system in Minnesota. Minnesota's current railroad property tax laws are outdated. The current method of valuing railroad property in Minnesota is called the Wisconsin Blue Chip Method. It used to be the industry standard, but at this point in time, Wisconsin does not even use it anymore. And so this change would do two things. First, it would change the way that the valuation is done, and it would also expand the base on which of property on which would be the value would be based. It would include rolling stock, locomotives, rail cars, trestles, and bridges. Minnesota is one of a handful of states that does not include some portion of this type of property in the valuation of railroads. This would result in state revenue and in local revenue, about $45 million spread across local communities, and as you'll see, broken down by township and other jurisdictions, in addition to $20 million in revenue for the state levy. The next set of provisions deal with a set of provisions with respect to corporate taxpayers. These are small changes that we think are necessary to keep pace with trends and changes in business law, reforms part of the corporate tax provisions. It attempts to level the playing field and keep existing law to the original intent. There are seven proposals in this set, and I'll go through them together. Please know that this total package would affect a few hundred corporate taxpayers. It does not affect a significant number. The first one would be to allow more companies to access the R&D credit. As you know, the R&D credit requires taxpayers to measure their increase in research activity. And some of this research activity for some companies started over 30 years ago. And we understand that at some points in time, records may not be available to establish that base year of the credit. And so at the department, we've been in the position where we need to disallow the credit because that company may not have the records available. So this proposal would allow any company who does not have those records to claim 16% as their base year. A company could still claim a larger credit by showing a lower percentage of that base year if they have appropriate documentation. But this would essentially allow all companies in this space to be able to claim that research and development credit, even if they don't have records from 30 years ago. We understand that sometimes innovators are focused on building that business and creating things and maybe not keeping those records. And from the department's perspective, our past practice of needing to disallow that has been the reason that we've brought this proposal forward to allow more questions.
Commissioner, members, the slide is not in the order of the sections on your handout that is going through with the detail. I believe that is Section 8 of Article 3 that Commissioner Bowerly just talked about. And, Commissioner, if you could refer to the sections and articles of these provisions, or at least get us close so that we can track when we're looking at the summary sheet.
Sure. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. If I might go in order of your order, I'll apologize that the slide is out of order. We'll proceed in the order that you have on the paper that you have in front of you.
I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
So I apologize. And next I'll go to including non-admitted insurance companies in the combined unitary business return. This provision addresses what we have started to see in terms of potentially sheltering income in what appears to be an insurance company but is not actually providing insurance products to the general public or to other businesses. We have, again, this is not a significant problem that we are seeing yet, but we think that it is something that we need to tackle at the front end. And what this means is this would not affect any insurance company providing insurance in Minnesota to any individual or to any business. But what this is we are starting to see that companies are creating an insurance company out of state and using that to shelter income because insurance companies, as you know, pay an premium tax. They do not pay tax as a part of their corporate unitary business. This would align those companies who are not actually engaging in insurance with the other companies who are paying on the unitary return. And so it would bring that into that unitary group. The next item on your spreadsheet is accelerate gain on sale of businesses. This proposal would allow us to recognize the tax gain at the time of the sale as opposed to installment sales. Again, this is not a significant number of instances we are seeing, but we are starting to see individuals who sell a business here in Minnesota, establish residency in another location, and then create an installment sale situation so that they don't realize that gain until they have become non-Minnesota residents. So this would affect the timing of that, recognizing the timing of that transaction so that the transaction would occur at the time it was made as opposed to when those payments were made in installment sales at a later point in time. The next item on your spreadsheet is to exclude the sale of derivatives from the apportionment sales factor. This would clarify how income from businesses would be allocated to the state. And again, this is not something that we are seeing a significant amount, as you will notice. This item actually tracks as a zero revenue, but it was, and Mr. Chairman, it could have been in the policy bill, but it was a change that we thought we would flag for the committee because it fit this set of provisions that we are addressing with the corporate tax reform that we are proposing.
Commissioner, is this dealing with the individuals that are buying derivatives as a risk management tool and then using that as a cost for business? And you're saying that you wouldn't think that would be a cost? Is that what this provision is addressing?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Mr. Iden to join me and explain this proposal in a little more detail. Thank you.
Welcome to the Tax Committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Iden, E-I-D-E-N, and I am an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And, Mr. Chair, to your question, what this does is it excludes the trades and the sale of derivatives from the sales factor of the apportionment. So if you have a financing arm of a corporation that is doing trades of derivatives and that sort of thing, it excludes those gross transactions from the sales factor, from the denominator of the sales factor.
Okay,
it's a clarification of how the department has been reading the sales factor statute.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
House members.
Thank you.
Commissioner Bowerly.
The next item is a proposal to exclude dividends received from debt finance stock in calculating the dividend received deduction. This proposal would put into Minnesota law a federal law provision that reduces the dividend received deduction if the purchase is debt financed. And essentially, it would reduce the amount by the amount of the stock that would be debt financed to would reduce the amount of income that we would see under current law. Under federal law in the proposal, the dividend received deduction percentage would be reduced by the average indebtedness percentage. So if 100% of the stock is debt financed, the dividend received deduction percentage would be reduced by zero. If the dividend received deduction percentage is 80%, and if 50% of the stock is debt financed, then the dividend received would be reduced by 40%. So it would correlate to the amount of the deduction percentage and how much of the stock is debt financed. And again, this is a provision that exists at federal law, and we are proposing that it become part of Minnesota law as well. The next item is to modify the definition of a financial institution. This is another place where we are attempting to clarify and perhaps tighten up what we thought was what we understand to be the original intent of the law. Financial institutions were once largely operated as corporations, and now we want to, as we are seeing more partnerships and limited liability companies operate as financial institutions, we propose amending that definition to include all of those other entities, focusing on the functionality of what is being transacted by those entities as opposed to their legal organization. And then the next item on your spreadsheet is the imposition of a penalty for using certain structures that do not serve a business purpose. This concept is commonly called economic substance. It is a theory under which the department can look at a transaction, and if there is no business purpose or profit-generating motive, and if the transaction was only entered into to evade taxes, then the state could revert to what that original transaction was. This is a important tool for the department. Many other states do have this provision, and it would allow us to really look at the true nature of what a transaction is and restore those transactions that are only aimed at avoiding tax in Minnesota. So those are the provisions, and again, I apologize. The last item on your chart is the first item on ours with respect to the R&D credit.
Questions, members?
The next set of proposals,
Commissioner Bowerly,
address a couple of places where we think we need to restore a little bit of fairness in Minnesota's tax law. The first one is to disallow the working family credit for full-year non-residents. Minnesota's credit is fairly unique in that it allows residents, part-year residents, and full-year non-residents to take this credit. And this credit is important for working families, but we are unique in that we allow it to be taken by non-year residents. And I think the next slide demonstrates explicitly for you the unusual nature of our credit, if you will. So if you are currently a Wisconsin taxpayer working in Minnesota, you are eligible to take both the Wisconsin Working Family Credit and the one in Minnesota. And the proposal would simply align that so that when a taxpayer is working in each state, they would take the one that is attributable to their state as opposed to, in the instance, our current state, which is Wisconsin residents are allowed, full-year residents are allowed to take Minnesota's, but Minnesota residents are not allowed to take both of them in the second one in Wisconsin. We know it's an important credit for families, but this is an important place for us to make sure that we are keeping that. We believe that this credit was initially intended for to help Minnesota families, and so we're just trying to bring that into that kind of alignment. The next one is,
Commissioner, I see you're highlighting Wisconsin in your slide, but that would be true of all the bordering states?
Not all states treat it exactly the same. Wisconsin and Iowa have credits equivalent to working family credit in Minnesota. North Dakota and South Dakota do not, so there would not be the double credit taken in North Dakota or South Dakota resident, and they don't provide that credit to their residents at all.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just, as long as we're on the border topic, not now, of course, but at some point, we get an update on reciprocity with Wisconsin.
Sure. We'll look for that in the future, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you. The next provision deals with the home office deduction. And in 2013, the federal regulations allowed for a new simplified method for individuals with a home office to calculate their home office deduction.
We'll have to pause during the construction sounds.
Okay. This provision is now available to Minnesota residents. This proposal simply makes clear that when residents are choosing this simplified method of calculating their home office deduction, that they also they take that portion out of their property tax refund. That is how the existing calculation works in Minnesota, and regardless of the choice an individual may make about how they calculate their home office deduction, that business portion should be excluded from their property tax refund. People should be able to make that choice. We don't want to incentivize one versus the other with the property tax refund aspect of it. The next one deals with another existing program, the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral. This program, we think, is important to seniors who may have trouble paying their property tax bill. It's a good program where people can seek help from the state. two challenges that we have seen in administering this program that we are proposing to make changes to. One is to lower the occupancy owner requirement from 15 years to 5 years. When this provision was put into law, many people stayed in their homes for much longer, and now many seniors may move from their family home as they become empty nesters and may not have been in their property for quite as long as in the past. So this would allow them to be able to qualify for the credit, for the deferral after living in their home for 5 years. The other change would be to move the application deadline from July 1 to November 1. Many seniors don't realize that they may need this help until they get their second half bill that is due on October 15th. And so we have the capacity at the department to be able to process that application. However, the law requires them to have applied by July 1st. So we're in a position where we need to tell them that they need to wait 9 months to be able to apply for that program. And at that point in time, they may be in further debt with respect to their property taxes. And this program allows for the state to come in and pay for a portion of that property tax bill, and then the senior pays it back to the state as they're able or upon sale of the home. So the state is made whole event at the end of the day, but it does allow seniors some options to stay in their homes if property taxes are the reasons that they may be having some financial trouble.
Commissioner, I'm looking at the spreadsheet here. I know this is a program that we've had around for a number of years that isn't being utilized very well. This doesn't appear to have the proposal isn't being supposed to have a significant cost. I'm wondering if, what kind of utilization you're thinking this might actually bring about. I'm on 187, 183, and 184.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just add that it's on page 7 of the spreadsheet.
Page 7. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, the reason we have suggested these changes is because we do understand that seniors, those who may be applying, don't qualify as a result of the two of the provisions that we say. The estimate does suggest about a 20% increase in the utilization of this program, so it may not, relative as to whether that's dramatic or not, but we do think it's important to make it as eligible, make those changes to make more people make it available to more people.
So this would be about a 20% increase in utilization. Okay,
yes.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowerly.
The next provision is really what we think is a correction to some of the changes that were made with the state tax a few years ago. We have seen a few instances in which a property owner has not been able to maintain tillable farmland for 3 years after the decedent's death as a result of eminent domain. And so if, for example, a community comes in and would like to build a field for the high school or put a road through, that would prevent that family from being able to maintain that farmland as it was originally constituted, and we don't think that was necessarily the intent of the legislature when that provision was passed. And so this would be a small change. Again, we don't see, you'll see from the revenue estimate, it is not a significant number, but it certainly is very important to those individuals who it does affect. And then, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, we don't have slides for the next two. The first one would be, and I apologize, I'm not sure of the order on.
Members,
is construction waste first or motor vehicles?
Members, there's a couple of provisions that has some transportation jurisdiction. We're going to leave them in this bill for now and see what the hearing issues are in transportation. Since the commissioner doesn't have these included in her slides, but I asked her to just speak briefly about that.
Certainly. The first one I'd like to mention to you is compressed natural gas. This would update Minnesota's definition by adopting the International Fuel Tax Agreement, or IFTAs, and the IRS's standard. This would provide an easier method for the businesses who do pay this tax. They would have to only engage in one calculation as opposed to two. This is a change that has been requested by industry and we think would be a simplification for Minnesota tax that would be a good change. The next provision, it deals with construction and demolition waste. It is in the solid waste chapter. I want to make clear that this does not impact mixed waste, which includes home garbage, refuge, and other solid waste from residential or commercial properties. This deals with industrial and construction waste. And essentially what it does is modernizes the rate for this type of solid waste. It aligns the tax with construction and demolition waste by ton and with the tax by volume. Taxpayers can either pay by ton or by volume, and because of the outdated calculation, those two no longer are equal. And so those taxpayers who are paying on a ton is not in line with the taxation by volume. And there was never an intent to make those two types of measuring methods, if you will, have results in different taxes. It's just that the calculation method hasn't been changed in so long. And so this would allow us to update that over 20 years and then allow us to continue to make that change going forward so that regardless of whether you are paying by volume or by weight, that the tax would be the same. And then the final provision that we have, and again, Mr. Chairman, if there are any others, please let me know, deals with motor vehicle leases. And this is a clarification that the allocation of revenue generated from sales tax and motor vehicle leases needs to be transferred to the portion to the transit or to the highway fund and Greater Minnesota Transit account, and the remaining 3.375% into the Heritage Fund. This result is necessary under the constitutional change that was made, and it just corrects the text so that the revenue can flow into those two accounts as we understand it should be given the current set of laws. So those are the provisions that are in this bill. We look forward to answering any questions that you might have. We look forward to working with you on this language and on these provisions as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A relatively small appropriation to help the department as it administers the Working Family Credit?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There is approximately, I think, $35,000 in appropriation. Some of our needs with respect to administering changes like this address programming changes. We have, as you know, a Gentax system, which brings all of our tax types into one. To make this change to the tax forms and to the system so that it would not allow for this credit to be paid would require some programming change.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner, we welcome the governor's proposals, particularly those dealing with Minnesota's, the youngest Minnesotans. I know in other areas of his budget proposal, he's working to improve ways for Minnesota's earliest learners to move forward. As we look at as the work that we can do to help those young Minnesotans, we are glad that he brings that the dependent care credit forward to be part of the discussion. We do have limited resources, so we'll see how all this works out this year. We're happy to be part of the discussion with regard to the railroads in Minnesota and where we're going with that. I think we're going to have a good, vigorous debate there and in other transportation areas. But thank you very much, and we'll look forward to a good debate as we go through this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazalka.
Well, thank you. This is a small thing, I believe. It's line 59 on the spreadsheets, the insurance gross earnings / fire marshal. Where is that and what is that again?
Mr. Chair and
Ms. McQuay.
Members, if I could just orient you to the spreadsheet. The first three columns there represent the November forecast, and then the November forecast is then carried through into the governor's budget. The change items are represented with italics, and so what you're seeing under the insurance gross premiums is the November forecast
for that.
So the governor would be recommending the November forecast plus the change items.
Thank you.
And members, the railroad appropriation request is $11 million ongoing, an upfront of $266,000 FY16. Is this from Ms. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, there's two appropriations that for provisions that are carried in the tax bill. The first, as the commissioner mentioned, was the initial cost for changing over for the working family credit for non-residents, and then there's a secondary appropriation request for the department for modernizing the railroad property, and that is $11,000 added to the base ongoing.
Any questions, members of the commissioner? Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair,
could you state your name, Mr. Cummings? I'm not sure you have yet.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Department of Revenue. The appropriation that we're seeking in order to administer the railroad changes is a little over $200,000. And then there are a smaller amount in order to maintain that amount. I think the 11 million that's being referenced is the interaction with the state general levy. And so in order to try and keep all the CI, the share of the levy that they would pay constant, part of this is to increase the CI levy. And so that's the 11 that was being referenced. It's $11 million in the first year. It's about $20 million in the second year, which an increase to the CI levy, keeping all of the share of the levy for other CI businesses a constant.
Thank you. Any questions of the commissioner members? Thank you, Commissioner. I know you have to go, and I expect the staff will stay to help with answer questions. We are going to move to public testimony. So thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Ms. Cadoon and Ms. Larson. Welcome, Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Here to express some concerns regarding the governor's bill. The first concern I want to mention is really just kind of the overall budget proposal and just the kind of the lack of tax relief that was provided in the bill overall. And kind of the lack of emphasis on how we can improve our business tax climate. So with the budget surplus of over $1.03 billion, the governor bill, as you could see, only allocates about $19 million to tax relief, basically about 1% of the general fund budget surplus. And so we were really disappointed to see kind of the lack of emphasis on tax relief and business tax climate improvement. Within that $19 million tax relief provision, however, there are tax increases on businesses. As I was just tallying, it looks about $50 million for the biennium. So even I said, even though the lack of emphasis on tax climate improvement, we actually see some increases on business taxpayers, and so we're really concerned over that provision, those provisions as well. I'll mention just a few items that we've currently heard about. We're still getting some feedback from our members, so there might be some more items that have concerns, but one would be the economic substance language that's included in the bill. That really gives broad authority to the Department of Revenue to determine what's considered within the tax statutes or not, really allows them authority to say, even if you're doing tax planning under the statutory authority, they can basically say, we don't think that's accurate or within kind of it doesn't smell right, and so we're not going to allow it. It really does shift a lot of authority from the legislature to the Department of Revenue, and we're very concerned over that provision on the amount of litigation it would lead to, and I think that's a very problematic provision. Some other items that we're concerned about is the sales of the pass-through entities, that change that's included in the bill as well. I think Paul Cummings just mentioned the railroad provision and the statewide business tax levy. Concerned on how that's structured, it looks like to me that it would really, going forward, I don't know how it does not impact the rest of the business community and shifting taxes onto them as well going forward on that railroad piece.
Well, Ms. Cadoon, to that point, my understanding of that is the railroad valuation is being added to the current valuation, so the if the provision doesn't go forward, the valuation for everybody else would stay the same. If it does go forward, the valuation for everybody else would stay the same, and this would be added on top. That's the way I understand that. But we'll make sure that we have a good understanding of that as we move forward with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because when I'm reading the initial language, I don't see how that occurs. So I'd be really interested to see how the impact of that moving forward.
Okay, thank you,
and
Mr.
I'm sure you're going to be
Mr.
hearing
Cadoon.
From the railroad industry going forward just on the changes to that industry as well. We're also hearing getting some feedback on the financial institution provision, and I'm not sure regarding some concerns over that, and so we might have some more discussion on that as we move forward. There's two items I do think are very good and we'd like to see included in the bill, and that deals with the R&D base expansion. That's a fix that the Department of Revenue has brought forward a few years now. I think it really would help with the administration of the R&D credit for those companies that do not have a base year currently, and it really helps move that credit and makes it more viable for those businesses. And the other provision that I would mention is also on the eminent domain provision. That just seems a fix that's needed for those taxpayers in that situation. Thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Questions, members? Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I am going to just make some general comments about the bill. We also are continuing to gather feedback from our members on the various changes in the language, specifically with respect to the corporate tax provisions in the bill. As Ms. Cadoon mentioned, in Article 3 of the corporate tax section, we do have some questions about the changes to the financial institution definition. We frankly have more questions than answers right now, and so we're going to continue to talk with our members, and I think we're going to try to talk with the department to get a better understanding of what the goal is there and how it affects the apportionment of income. I also want to express some strong concerns about, in Article 3, Sections 1 through 5, the so-called economic substance provisions. This is the same language that the department brought forth in 2013. We opposed it then. We do continue to oppose it today. As was mentioned, this provision gives the Department of Revenue just very broad, sweeping powers to disregard transactions that follow the statutes, but they might feel, for whatever reason, don't serve a business purpose, in their opinion. And the standard by which the taxpayer basically has to prove that the transaction has economic substance is a clear and convincing standard, which I'm told by the experts is an almost impossible standard to meet. So the potential is there for the department to basically say, we disagree with this transaction, we're going to impose an assessment on you. The penalties in the bill are very, very strong, 20% and 40% penalties. And it would be almost impossible for a taxpayer to be able to fight that assessment because the standard is so difficult to meet. And so they're put in the untenable position of paying a penalty that maybe not be legitimate or going through a costly litigation or appeal process. And so it would just cause a lot of uncertainty for taxpayers, too. You know, we all know that businesses like certainty, and without knowing how the department is going to, you know, rule on any given tax law on any given day, it just causes a lot of concern for taxpayers. And theoretically, I've had folks tell me that, you know, you could actually make a charitable contribution and the department could theoretically say that that does not have economic substance because there's no profit motive there. It might affect your tax situation, but you didn't do it for profit purposes, and so theoretically they could say, we're not going to allow that. Same thing with maybe you wanted to switch from being a C-corp to an S-corp. There may be tax reasons for doing that. Is the department not going to allow that under this provision? So just a lot of concerns with that proposal. And again, it's also it's retroactive. So it goes back to this beginning of this tax year, which is a problem. So we will continue gathering feedback. We will follow up with members of the committee and with the department with additional comments, and appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Larson, I need more clarity on that. How does the federal government treat it versus the state? You know, so are they then having to sort of have two different clarities of how they need to do business? You know, because I think the average business owner is going to be looking to the federal tax code to see what they're supposed to be doing. Would this then just be that much different from that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazalka, I think one of the big concerns is my understanding is the federal law does not require a clear and convincing standard either. So that's a big difference. And so, yeah, I think that it would create more confusion and like I said before, a lot of uncertainty in terms of complying.
Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, if I could add to that as well, realize the federal government has a whole body of case law that deals with economic substance language as well. Minnesota does not. So that's going to create a lot of litigation issues because of that, because we'd have to create all this case law dealing with that. And there are differences in the economic substance language that's being codified here between what the federal government has. So it's much giving Minnesota would have much broader authority. And it also seems, like I said, regarding the case law, and also there's some different language that would make it more certain for taxpayers in this area.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Let's move. We're going to move around a little bit. Mr. Appitz and Ms. Moss. Welcome, Mr. Appitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
My name is John Appitz. I'm with the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, but I'm representing all the railroads that operate here in the state of Minnesota today. So thank you for this opportunity to comment generally, and we'll have some further comments later on when you begin to dig into the bill.
And to that point, Mr. Appitz, for everybody, we are taking a little higher view look at things today. This is just an overview presentation. When we have provisions that we will be proposing to put into the Senate tax bill or to move forward, there will be much more opportunity for testimony, just so that the public knows this is not the last shot at these provisions that we are discussing today. So thank you for bringing that up, Mr. Appitz. Mr. Appitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that point, this will probably surprise you, but the railroad industry in Minnesota strongly opposes Article 2. Which deals with railroad personal property. By treating railroad personal property different from other commercial industrial property, it violates federal law and puts Minnesota out of step with its neighboring states. Article 2 violates the Railroad Revitalization Reform Act of 1976. It's also known as the 4R Act, and you'll hear it referred to that several times over. The law was passed in the 1970s, in 1976, as a matter of fact, to protect railroads from the sort of discriminatory taxation that the governor proposes here. The 4R Act requires that railroads be treated no worse than any other commercial industrial taxpayer. And this fact has been litigated in the past. The federal courts in Minnesota have recognized that there is no doubt that railroad personal property must be exempt from taxation given Minnesota's exemption for other commercial industrial taxation, exemption from other commercial industrial taxpayers' personal property. And for reference, I'll take you over to Burlington Northern versus James, which was in 1973. In fact, the Minnesota Department of Revenue actually agreed with the railroads and stipulated to this result. I'll quote the court. Under Minnesota law, virtually all personal property, including commercial industrial personal property, has been exempt from ad valorem taxation. For purposes of this action, the parties agree that Section 306 requires that the personal property of railroads, such as Burlington Northern, will otherwise be exempt from taxation. And now the legislature is being asked to do what the department itself has said is illegal. Further, Article 2 also attempts to codify railroad valuation rules, even though Minnesota property tax statutes do not do so for other commercial industrial property or for other utility property. That's unique and it's somewhat odd. Typically, when the department believes that such rules are necessary, it goes through the usual rulemaking process. This bill would short-circuit that process, that normally rulemaking process, but just for railroads. The bill singles out railroad taxpayers, removing them from the usual process in which information is submitted and evaluated and we come to an orderly and transparent rule. We're unaware of any other industry where this is done. For these reasons which we hope to elaborate in later hearings, Mr. Chairman, we ask that Article 2 be removed from this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Appetz. Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sanger.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Appetz has hit Article 2 pretty hard on the head, so to speak. Will we have an ability to hear a response to that at this point or later on?
Well, Senator Senjum, what I think we're going to do, this appears to be a pretty significant provision. My guess is that we will have part of a committee dedicated to more discussion from this. I'd like the department to have an opportunity to defend their position on it, and we'll hear more from them. There are other folks from the railroad industry that wanted to testify, but I thought today, being we're doing an overview of the governor's proposal, that we wouldn't do an in-depth treatise on railroads, but we would save time during the year for that. Yeah,
okay.
I'm not planning on
this
being the only opportunity for railroads to be discussed. But if you have questions, let's ask Mr. Appetz. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Kuvas. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent 95% of the banks in Minnesota and savings institutions. I just wanted to comment, reiterate what Ms. Larson and Ms. Cadoon said about the financial institutions modification of the definition. We are still trying to get feedback from some of our members. We do have some questions for the department as to who this is going to directly impact. And why the definition needed to be expanded. As we're looking at the list and also the information in the research packet, it appears that the goal is to that it's trying to expand to make sure that all financial institutions are included in this definition. And I think that Commissioner stated that it was based on functionality and not how financial institutions are organized. And I guess it's kind of interesting that as we're expanding to kind of get to LLCs and partnerships, that some of our direct competition is still not listed underneath financial institutions. So I think if we're going to take a look at the definition of financial institutions, that all financial institutions should be included in that list. But we will continue to discuss with the department on this definition.
Thank you very much. And did you state your name for the record?
Teresa Kuvas.
Thank you, Ms. Kuvas. Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to say, you must be talking about credit unions.
Yes, we are, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Kuvas.
After we looked at the list, I think the definition does appear to be coming from a multi-state tax commission model language, and credit unions were on the initial model language, but it is not included in the expansion of our definition.
So, Mr. Chair, as we look at this, I like both banks and credit unions. I have money at both places, but I think we got to be real careful how we deal with these things.
Very good. Thank you very much. Ms. Madden, Ms. Schubach, and Mr. Connery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Ms. Madden.
Members of the committee, my name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project, which is a research and advocacy organization that promotes public policies that expand opportunity and economic security to all Minnesotans. We are also part of the Kids Can't Wait Coalition, which supports affordable, accessible child care for all Minnesota families. So we'd like to thank Governor Dayton for making affordable child care a priority in his budget. Child care can be one of the largest costs that families with children face. And when families have affordable child care, parents can go to work and support their families while their children are in stable environments that support their development, and businesses can find the reliable employees that they need. Governor Dayton's budget would update the Child and Dependent Care Tax Credit to better reflect the rising costs of child care, and it would help more families afford child care that meets their needs. We also thank Governor Dayton for combining his tax credit proposal with an increase in funding for basic sliding fee child care assistance, which is particularly important to reach the families that struggle most to afford child care. We think that it's appropriate to take this two-pronged approach to affordable child care. We would recommend a couple of tweaks with a larger increase in basic sliding fee to serve more of the over 2,000 Minnesota families on the waiting list, and a more targeted expansion of the dependent care credit that does not raise the income ceiling quite so far. The Minnesota Budget Project also appreciates the ongoing work of the administration to provide a level playing field for all taxpayers, including the work that they're looking at in the corporate area. So we'd like to thank Governor Dayton for focusing on the needs of Minnesota families, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Questions, members? Thank you, Ms. Madden. Mr.
Chairman Skoy, members of the committee, my name is Chris Conry. I'm here representing Take Action Minnesota. We're a grassroots-based, membership-led organization with supporters in every Senate district in the state. I lead our work on economic policy and tax policy, and I'm here today to speak in favor of the governor's proposals on corporate tax reform. We're happy to see that the governor is continuing to level the playing field between businesses and families in the state of Minnesota. A number of his proposals, for example, the treatment of insurance companies, the definition of financial institutions, and the economic substance test, take aim at what are complex income-shifting tax avoidance strategies that really a very small number of businesses in Minnesota are actually using. We realize these are not a huge part of the proposal dollar-wise, but we think they're important because they continue the work of the Senate and the governor that you've led to make the corporate franchise tax more simple and more fair. So thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to a full conversation about these when you look at the proposals in full later on. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Thank you both very much. Anything else for the department members? Anybody else that would wish to comment on the governor's proposal? Seeing none, thank you all very much. Members, Monday, we are going to meet at 9 o'clock. We're going to try to be done at 10. We have conflict issues, so we're going to try to be done within an hour. We will be doing Senator Coonan's bill on online gaming. Thursday of next week, we'll be doing member bills. I don't believe the division is meeting next week.
That's correct.
One other bit of recognition. Today is Senator Rest's 11,000th day of service in the legislature. So, committee's adjourned.